Dan Hayes, thank you so much for the weather app. And that was the final one from the Broome Bureau of Meteorology, from you and your colleague, Dave Murray. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Vanessa. Dan. Sorry we're not doing it anymore, but after 100 years, that's it. Observers no longer going to be doing the radio crosses.
It is a bittersweet moment. Dan, why is this the case?
Look, so we're just continuing the program of automation at our stations. Both Dave and I did come to Broome from stations that have now been automated. Dave had been out at Halls Creek for a number of years, about seven?
7 years.
7 years, yep. And I'd been down at Port Hedland for 7 years. Both of those stations were automated. Atmospheric profiler went in at Halls Creek to do the same job as the balloons out there. And down at Port Hedland, we've actually had an automatic balloon launcher down there for about 20 years. So we had a few other things to automate, and then we de-staffed that station. Both Dave and I were fortunate enough to be able to come up here to Broome for a few more years. Yep. But the automation program is moving on. At the moment, a little bit slow. It's been interrupted by COVID, as so many other things. But we do know that our automatic balloon launcher that's due to go here did land in the country about a month or so ago. It's sitting up at Darwin. So they just have to sort out siting and getting that installed. We're not actually leaving yet. We're probably still in town for about another 6 months or so. But there is a fair bit of work around the whole de-staffing side of things, and we're also looking at starting to transition a little bit to the new work model that we'll have as an ongoing thing for us. So, yeah, they're moving things like the radio crosses away while they can, and I guess we're still here maybe as a bit of a fallback for a little while, depending on how things go. But, yeah.
So Dan Hayes and Dave Murray, the final ever radio broadcast from the Broome Bureau of Meteorology. Dave, how did you get into the weather originally? What was it about a meteorological career that inspired you?
Oh, well, I used to make snow for a living for ski resorts. And my knee surgeon, after many, many knee operations, basically said, you get yourself an office job, I'm not doing any more knee operations until you do. So I put in for teaching in the Bureau. I got the job with the Bureau. I got the offer of either a Met or Observer. I took the Observer because I like working outside.
And how long ago was that, Dave, when you joined?
2007, so a fair few years ago now. Been out in different locations, 7 years in Halls Creek, 4 years here, Queensland Leave Relief before that. And I've had my knee operation and got a false knee, so I can keep on going.
You might be able to ski now. Dan, why did you join the Met Bureau?
I did some uni study, and then I dropped out of that. I ended up working in a factory. And thankfully, the study that I had done had gotten me a diploma, and this ad for the Bureau came up to work as an observer. And I thought, that looks all right. It's better than packing vegetables in a cold room in a factory.
For sure. It's an outdoor job for starters, looking at the sunshine.
Cool. So, yeah, I was able to get that with the study that I had done. And, I've been doing that now for 21 years.
What is it about observing the weather, Dave, that you find endlessly interesting?
It's the clouds. You ever look outside and have a look at all the shapes and designs? And like yesterday morning, you could see almost like lenticular alto cue forming, where the wind was carving out patterns underneath before you got the warming of the day and we got all that cumulus yesterday afternoon. It was almost like a November day, you know, with the building up there but not going very far into the vertical. So always interesting to watch the clouds and see how they react and everything. And similar to Dan, with my background, I did a degree in applied physics back in the day, and when it came time to transition, having that degree helped me out, even though it was a decade later. So,
well, that's useful. Dan, the weather, the daily weather change for you, what's fascinating?
Look, I just like being able to go outside and look at it and enjoy it. I love watching the thunderstorms build. It's probably been one of the sadder things about the gradual move to the automation is that the automation has taken over throughout the day. We've worked shorter shifts. We're not actually shift workers anymore. We're just day workers. So we go home at about 3 o'clock, finish work, and all the thunderstorms happen afterwards. So for a long time, it's been
So you were still on the job, but at home on the veranda watching the storms.
Yeah. So, especially Halls Creek days, you know, the storms didn't fire up until the evening because of the out there in the desert, the thunderstorms actually get triggered from the top down rather than bottom up from here. Here you've got lifting that happens that generates your storms. Out there you've had the lifting all day, but because you've got so much vertical and the cloud base is like 12 to 15,000 feet running up to 45,000 in the evening when the sun sets, the heating goes off the top and it actually collapses down and you actually get top-down trigger of lightning storms, which is amazing. I didn't know about that until I got to Halls Creek. So,
spectacular.
Yeah, and because the cloud base is 15,000 feet up, it's a massive arc to get to the ground when there is a lightning strike. So you can see them 100 kilometres away, whereas here on the coast, when you may only have a cloud base around the 4,000 or 5,000 feet, it's quite a short, sharp transition between the base of the clouds and the ground for the discharge of the lightning. So to all the storm chasers out there, it's been a pleasure knowing you all, and we'll keep on doing what we do.
With me in the studio today is Daniel Hayes and Dave Murray, both are from the Bureau of Meteorology based in Broome, but not for much longer because the process of automation has finally arrived at this remote outpost. It's been a process rolling across the Bureau right around the nation. Daniel, before automation, what were some of the interesting gadgets and technological tools that the likes of you and Dave have been using to monitor different aspects of weather?
I think one of the favourite things for when we have visitors come to the station used to be the old Campbell Stokes sunshine recorder. It literally is a crystal ball.
Yes, it's a beautiful round glass globe.
Yeah. We would actually use a sheet of cardboard, and depending on your latitude, and it the ball's design actually changes between, say, Hobart and here.
Really?
You've got to have the cardboard in the position where the focus point of the crystal ball, for want of better words, the Stokes Campbell, goes, and would put the cardboard into this little slot and change it before sunrise and, you know, or sunset.
And it burns, doesn't it? It creates a little burn.
It scorches a little line. And we used to have to pull it out and count the number of hours that the sun had been out for the day. And when the sun went behind clouds, it didn't actually scorch a line. So you actually got a defined thing. Now there's an array of about 10 instruments out on a post that's actually taken over from that one manually read gauge. All the automatic stuff for the sunshine, the intensity, it's all automated now. And so you've got that amazing piece of electronics that actually replaces this little crystal ball. So
what's going to happen to all the crystal balls then? Where are they going?
Oh, we'd love
most
one.
Of them have been returned to stores.
Yeah. I've heard a few disappeared, but yeah.
Well, that's the magic of crystal balls. You never know quite when they're going to be there or not. Any other interesting pieces of technology in your long careers, Dan?
Oh, look, it was interesting when I rocked up at Cobar. We still had one of the old WF2 radars sitting there.
What is that?
So basically, that was the way the radars work these days is it's controlled by a computer. The old ones, you would actually have to manually steer them to maintain a lock on the balloon. So this one had a little cabin that you would sit in. Now, it wasn't operational when I got there. It had not been operational for quite a few decades by that stage. But it was fantastic to get in there and have a look. I had seen examples of this sort of stuff when I was at training school in 2000. But just sitting there, the differences between how manual the process used to be and how we've now moved to it being almost fully automatic. It's quite interesting.
And Dave, I have seen you in a full hazmat suit, for want of a better word, launching a balloon at the Bureau of Meteorology in Halls Creek, all kitted up and the balloon popping out of that sort of silver turret on the hill.
Yeah, the only reason I would have been wearing that is that I would have had an issue in the morning and I had to deal with that issue. And that as you say, hazmat suit, it's actually just one thin layer of cotton that's fire retardant. And with hydrogen, because we use hydrogen because we can generate it ourselves at all the stations around the nation without having to transport it, so the risk of transport's good, you know, no risk involved. And we fill up with hydrogen. If hydrogen ever catches fire, it burns at 2,002 degrees centigrade. You can't see it You can't smell it. And the flame is non-visual, so the first thing you know is your skin blisters. But the way to protect yourself from that is one single layer of cotton over your body. So a pair of goggles, little white gloves, cotton gloves, and a whole hooded ensemble of, basically a lab coat, is enough to protect yourself from any flashover that may occur. So if you're going into the hydrogen zone, you put all the gear on and wander in there and release a stuck balloon or terminate it or whatever needs to be done, and then return to the safe area, at which time you can take your gear off.
Intriguing. And this will all be automated from now on, in the balloon will be popping out by itself at the scheduled time that the computer tells it.
Yeah. And I think one of the most amazing pieces of equipment I ever got to use was, we used to use theodolites when the radar...
Theodolites.
A surveyor uses a theodolite to lay out the land. We use a theodolite to chase the balloon through the air, and you actually manually chase it with little wheels, turning it, chasing it, riding down the azimuth elevation, and then you go back and work out the ascent, the wind speed and direction from those calculations.
So plenty of science, plenty of maths.
Lots of science. And then you'd have to, back in the day, you'd have to then send that message as like a telex form and put it into the system. It's now all automatically generated and put it in. And the thing that amazed me with the theodolite is when you got to where the wind changes direction, where you've got inversion or wind shear or whatever, and you had to really wind the wheels really fast to catch up with the balloon and keep it going.
But I can just picture that.
Yeah,
we're talking about the weather.
There's some amazing equipment out there.
Absolutely.
That we've got to utilise.
And we've just brought into the studio a magnificent rainbow cake decorated with little cartoon suns and clouds and even a lightning bolt and a banner of thank you. And the rainbow cake is for Dan Hayes, Dave Murray, and all the staff at the Bureau over many, many years who've kept the public well informed. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Vanessa, and the ABC.
Well,
it's amazing to be able to help and supply data to you guys and answer questions at random times. It is one of the most amazing parts of the job, actually, being able to give feedback to the public and interacting with everybody. And even when you walk down the street, you're quite often in a small town like Broome, you get asked what's happening.
I bet. Do you go to barbecues and dinner parties in the supermarket and people, what's the weather tomorrow, Dan? Dave, what about that storm last night?
Yeah. It sucks a bit, doesn't it? Because isn't the standard thing to talk about at a party is the weather and work? Well, we've just killed two in one stone.
But it makes you very popular. People want to know, don't they? You are like a touchstone in some ways. The weather is key to many an Australian's life, and I think wherever you go in the
important.
World, the weather is vital. It's a great way to break the ice, so to speak.
Yeah.
This doing the crosses with the ABC and other stations around the country as well has been a great way. I mean, we've worked at various places around the country, so you're moving into new communities quite often, and it's been a great way to connect with those communities when you move into them as well. I mean, of course, there's other things you can do when you go to various community groups and so forth, but we've been privileged to be able to talk to the local media and get ourselves into the communities in that way. So that's been a very enjoyable thing, and it's probably one of the, apart from the 5-minute commute, it's probably one of the things I'll miss most when we move to the capital cities.
It's very
true. The people and those storm watching from the veranda. Now, I do need you to draw the quiz winner, Dave. I might get you to do the honours. The answer is, it was Gone with the Wind. By great coincidence, Gone with the Wind, published on this day in 1936. Another wind, weather-inspired thing. Just draw a name out of the box there, Dave. What have we got? Oh, Dave's putting on the glasses to read my scribbly writing.
We have a phone number, Raymond, Halls Creek.
You're right, stamping
Halls
ground.
Creek.
Raymond from
Always
Halls
Creek. Always supporting people from Halls Creek. Great. I won't read out the mobile
Dave,
number.
No. Multitude of stories from Halls Creek.
Oh, yes, absolutely, because you have been in some interesting places over time, whether it's Giles or the island off Queensland,
Willis Island. Giles is an amazing place.
Fascinating.
Warwick, in a community out there. It's amazing. The Rawlinson Ranges, which are 300-400 metres above the surrounding desert plains out there. It's just so spectacular. So many waterholes and places you can adventure once you find out where all the land that you're allowed to go into and not allowed to go into, because there's a lot of men's and women's lands out there in sacred areas. So,
well, you've certainly been accepted, learned told, a lot, seen a lot. Explore. You've got a new chapter ahead of you over the next 6 months as the automation process is finalised. But thank you again for being part of ABC Kimberley for so many, many years.
Thank you, Vanessa.
Thank you, Vanessa.